listening to It's Confirmed with Tomiko Torres, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there. Happy Tuesday to you all. Glad that everyone's back to join me for today's exciting session of, lots of good things to talk about, as usual. Guys, at first I wanted to have a moment of silence. I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a gentleman that came on by the name of Mike that had custody of his son through DHS. And he unfortunately passed from COVID about 2 weeks ago. And I just wanted to have a moment of silence for him, to share our warm, heartfelt appreciation for him coming on the show and sharing his experience with DHS and that whole CUA umbrella, you know, that system. I just want to have a moment of silence for him. Thank you guys for that. I truly appreciate it. Moving forward today, you know, there was a gentleman that I spoke to in regards to his hardship with his life going forward. Really, really nice guy. I don't want to reveal who he is just yet, but the purpose of me discussing this particular gentleman is he had such a heartfelt story about his struggle with, you know, being grown up, you know, becoming the man that he always knew he would be. And through the struggle of being married for 42 years. And some time ago, we had announced that we had a $2,000 to give away. So, you know, this story was very compassionate and really meaningful. And I felt like this story really touched me in a way that it had touched me, you know, by talking to this gentleman. Really, really interesting story. In 42 years of marriage, which, by the way, he claims that him nor his wife is over 40, by the way. So maybe he'll get a hint into who I'm talking about. It could be him. So, you know, I want to say that I will be hosting a dinner for him and his wife to present them with this ring that will be recorded. That we can air on the show. I'm positively sure the wife knows nothing about this adventure as of yet, but he really had a heartfelt story of how he professed his love, you know, to his wife and his years of dedication of working and striving, and not just him, but his wife also. They've both been hardworking people that are both now retired from their jobs. And I kind of saw the ring that she had. You know, it's the same, you know, the love ring of back in those days, 42 years ago, of just this, you know, something simple, a regular band, you know, but her acceptance of having that band on her hands, it means a lot. You know, nowadays people are looking at, you know, give me like 10 carats and I'll think about becoming your wife at the end of the day. I had someone mention to me that the guy had to actually buy them a house before she would even entertain a proposal of marriage, you know, and it was kind of strange, but I said, you know, everybody has their standards. So I would, you know, go along with whatever standard was or is. And I would accept that because that is her standard. Meanwhile, myself, I'm thinking if my husband had a, you know, bubblegum ring or a jello ring or a, you know, a lifesaver gummy, and he slid it on my hand and said, listen, I love you and I want to marry you. I would have taken it and said, hey, what? You know, we will enjoy this gummy lifesaver together. We'll chew it up. Every day we'll take a different bite. And I would have enjoyed whatever bubblegum ring he would have given me. You know, that's a difference with true love and love, you know, that has its prerequisites of I got to have X, Y, Z moving forward in my life. And, you know, marriage today means a lot to some, and to some, it, you know, it's a game. There's a lot of things going on in a different world today with people that are married and this whole domestic violence situation that's taking place today. And recently, the other day, there was someone in New Jersey who is a, she was a realtor, and she was stabbed to death by her chiropractic husband. And I would like to give a special shout out to her, Melissa Kolonich, here in New Jersey. It's very sad. You know, she was a great person from what I've heard from a lot of different people, you know, who valued her marriage. It's just that something went wrong somewhere and things didn't work out. And sometimes people decide, listen, I'm not just going to take myself down. I'm going to take you with me because this is what, you know, it has to be. I can't live without you and you're not going to live without me. I'm not going to want to see you happy, even if I'm dead with someone else. Mentally, that's how people think. So it's very sad that things have to come down to this, this type of thing. But this gentleman has been married for 42 years, him and his wife. They have had a very happy marriage thus far. You know, everyone has their ups and downs. And people say, you know, if it's too happy, something is wrong. Something is wrong with that couple. They're crazy. They're hallucinating. No marriage is ever perfect. That is very true. But people have a way of working through their differences in life and capping it off and knowing what works for them. So if you can find that meeting place somewhere in the middle and know what works for you, it actually can work out very well. So I would like to say kudos to Mr. 42 Years, and I look forward to hosting the dinner and talking to him and his wife about their endeavors going forward now that she can have a ring of her dreams, because the ring is absolutely beautiful. And I will take a picture, by the way, guys, and I will post it so you guys can take a look at it. It's an absolutely fabulous ring. Actually, I'm going to post it on TikTok. So look out for it under Tommy Torres. So just to keep you updated with that. Also, I wanted to talk a little bit about King Hill and some new discoveries that has come about in that particular case. I didn't want to touch on it too much because it's a real, you know, touchy-feely subject for some people out there, you know, because people never got the real answers that they were looking forward to, you know, of this little kid coming back home and being declared safe. But someone sent me some information. Of course, I can't disclose who it came from. But it was some information in regards to a statement that was made by an immediate family member of King Hills. And the statement basically says that the mother may know who took this kid. And, you know, it's kind of bad when family members start playing sides in a situation like this. But it's a crucial statement, by the way. And actually, when things get turned over to me such as that, I had to therefore forward it over to Tiana Park's attorney for him to take a look at it and verify it and investigate it and make sure that it's accurate information from the source. But as I'm being told, as of yesterday, that is accurate information. And it is pertinent in this case with King Hill. So I just wanted to keep you guys updated because this is a case that will not just be forgotten about. This is a case that will forever be spoken about until his body is found or he is brought to surface. As some people say that, you know, it may be 5 years from now, he may be reappearing, you know, not in a ghost form, but in a form back to his family where he has to rebuild and get to know everybody all over again. You know, because at the age of 2 and 3, they have a tendency to forget, you know, because I know it was mentioned before this blue bike that he had that he liked so much, you know, that Parks had mentioned that he was riding. So it's easy to coax a kid at that age, give them something that they like, and guess what? They'll be very friendly to go along with you. So let's keep those things in mind. And don't forget, you know, always keep your eyes and ears open because there's always new information that's going to surface. And besides, the murder weapon for Parks has been thrown out. So I'm not sure how far this case is actually going to go. We should have some updates from the courts probably sometime before Christmas. So I'll keep you guys updated with that. And I'd like to thank all of my listeners for sharing different information, sending information to me so I could get it across to Tiana Park's attorney. I really, really, truly want to let you guys know that I truly appreciate all that you do and all that you have done. So going forward, any information that you have, you know that it will be forwarded over to the proper authority to handle it. And I'd like to give a special shout out to the case managers for CUA who listen in, and they're one of my biggest supporters, by the way, DHS workers, kudos to them. Greatly appreciate them listening in. CASA of Philadelphia, they're always listening. They're always participating. Great to know that they're on as well. Just to give them a special shout out. And then there's a strange case. I don't know if anyone has heard of this little boy that was a DHS case, I would say back in 1993, I believe it was. His name was Kashawn Vanderhorst. And he's been missing since 1995, I believe it was. And his mother, who is a Philadelphia native, she is saying that, you know, she gave her son up to someone at DHS and this kid was never, ever found. So real stories, guys. You know, the project that is handling this case is called the Doe Network. And they're a part of the Charlie Project out of Philadelphia. Now, the strangest thing is this kid, well, let me take you back a little bit. DHS was formed in 1919, and in 1929, DHS, which is Department of Human Services, the Social Services end, was actually conformed to being a real entity in 1929. So this was a little strange to me, because this lady that had about, I don't know, seven kids. I believe it was seven kids. Now this story dates back to 1995. And the lady's name, which I can release because it's a total public story, Tina Vanderhorst. She was a drug addicted mother of seven children by 1995. Four of her children died in the 1980s. She had an 8-month-old son, Terrence, who died in 1980. She had a 3-month-old daughter, Katrina, who died in 1983. And then her 10-month-old son, Kenneth, of course, all with her last name, Vanderhorst, died in 1985. And they determined that these children either had SIDS or pneumonia. So either she had them in a really, really cold place or these children were born sick already. And then in 1988, she had a crack-addicted baby girl that was born premature, only 1 pound at birth, and she died 4 weeks after she was born. And then Tina had two more sons born in 1986 and 1987, who she never had custody of. One of her sons, Kishon, who is the subject that we're talking about, was born in 1993 while she was in prison. And he was in foster care after she gave birth while she was in prison. And then when she got out of prison in 1994, November, she was given custody back of her son. Now, this doesn't sound too right to me, but hey, maybe I'm missing something. But in 95, a DHS social worker started going to the home. So I'm just trying to understand, from 1929 to 1995, and get where I'm going with this. 1929, you are a real entity where you have full control over possessing the children, taking control, making sure they're safe. But in 1995, after this lady had kids that died in 1980, I mean, no investigation was opened up, by the way. The only investigation that opened up was in 1995 when a DHS social worker started doing regular visits to the home. And guess what the social worker noted? She noted that there was no evidence of drug use and Tina was a good mother. So it was no need for them to really interact with Tina in regards to the baby. You know, and this was in January of 1995, by the way. Then, mysteriously, in August of 1995, DHS mysteriously closed their case as they saw no reason or evidence to keep the case open. So it behooves me to think that 1980, the first baby died, which is an eight-month-old kid, and then a three-month-old daughter in 1983, and then a 10-month-old son in 1985. It's just kind of strange that we're looking at 10 years later, they want to pop up and say, oh, she's out of jail, she's off of drugs. Doesn't mention any drug tests, by the way. But I would assume that they did follow the proper protocol and give her drug tests to make sure that, you know, mom is not getting high anymore and the kid is safe and we could basically just leave the kid with the mother or leave the kid with, you know, a family member and the mother still has rights to the kid, even though she's dirty 30, as I've been told. But, you know, this goes back to 10 years of neglect. So these type of stories are never pushed out there to the media, you know, as far as 1980 to 1995. By the way, the family members all of a sudden started questioning Tina about the baby, Keyshawn. Like, okay, we haven't seen the baby. Where is he? She's telling her family members, well, DHS, they've taken him. And they're like, what do you mean he's taken by DHS? Mind you, this is a woman that lived on the 1400 block of 17th Street in Philadelphia, which after now this baby is supposedly taken by DHS, an investigator goes out, notice that the place was rat infested, cluttered, filthy, uninhabitable. And she sticks to her story. She says DHS had taken her son. And when they went back to verify, you know, which DHS worker was involved and who actually took this kid, come to find out, the kid was nowhere in the system. So now she's arrested. And now her story has changed because now she's being charged with morals of a minor with corruption. And she's also being charged with endangering the welfare of a child. So she still sticks to her story and says, oh, DHS has him. I don't know what happened. So then she comes up with a new story and she says, oh no, I sold him. I sold him to a woman named Virginia Graham. She said, Virginia, someone she didn't know. She said that Virginia showed up at her apartment one day. Virginia heard that Tina needed help caring for the baby, and she offered to take him for $500. So she took the money, gave Virginia the baby, spent the cash on crack cocaine. Then she begins to give a description. Okay, this is what Virginia looks like. And she says, wait a minute, I remember something now. She has two children of her own and she lives in Philadelphia. This woman, Virginia Graham, was never located or identified. So her story now says, again, she's changed her stories. You know, she says, She was high and she left the baby at a fruit stand on Cecil B. Moore Avenue and does not know what happened after that. So now in 1996, Tina was sentenced to 2.5 to 7 years for child endangerment in connection with Keyshawn's disappearance. Mind you, she has never given a true story in regards to this kid missing. And then after she's released from jail, she says she went back to the story about Virginia Graham and said that that was the real truth, and said that she was high, drunk, and thought Virginia Graham was a DHS worker. And then she goes on to say, you know, I believe that someone from DHS stole my kid. This woman has had such a troubled past, you know, from violence. She's been a victim of domestic violence. By the way, after she did those 2.5 to 7 years, which 2.5 is on the low end, because she also suffers from mental illness, which this goes back to other stories of children missing and the parents suffering from mental illness. It kind of makes you wonder, did the parent actually sell the kid themselves? Did they give it away to the, you know, give the kid away to the biological parent, you know, after they named so many other people, you know, having an involvement in a child's disappearance? I mean, this is more like a common thing for drug addicted parents to do. They have many stories. And the crazy part about it is you will never know what the real story is, because if that person is suffering from mental illness, severe drug addiction, you will never know what the real story is. And by the way, this baby was never, ever found. So for all you know, this kid is living under a different identity. Maybe the dad came back and actually took the kid, because he's like, you know, all her other kids are dead or gone. So, you know, let me try to save this one. That could very well be the situation here, because it's very strange that this woman has three stories. None of the stories check out. Virginia Graham, who allegedly took the baby in exchange for $500. No whereabouts. Listen, 1995 was a big year for stealing babies. You know, so I don't think that this woman actually handed this baby over to someone. I think someone took this baby and she was so high that she just does not remember what happened. And the system is a partial blame, because they were very lenient on her sentence. Meanwhile, you have Tiana Parks sitting in prison. No, I would say jail. Same thing. She's still a prisoner. You have her sitting in jail saying, listen, I dropped this kid off. You got someone that gave a statement that says, actually, you know, there's a different story to tell here. That's a family member of King Hill, you know. That's saying, listen, there's something that somebody's not saying, and there's people that colluded with this, you know, situation that's going on. And guess what? Tiana Parks is set to rot if the truth doesn't come out, which it will, because there's a lot of compensating factors and there's a lot of evidence surfacing from people who want to now come clean and say, this is not what happened. She truthfully dropped him off to his rightful owner, and then he mysteriously disappeared. And like Tina, the baby mysteriously disappeared. And the system was very lenient on her because she suffers from severe drug abuse. She suffers from depression. She suffers from mental illness. So the system is going to be very lenient on this type of individual because mental illness is real. You know, they can go into a psych ward and hopefully can get the help that they need and deserve, because a lot of mental illness cases, they get overlooked by the judicial system. Instead of, you know, being mean to these people that are drug users, and unfortunately, some of them will be drug users for the rest of their lives. And it's nothing, any program, any situation, anything that nobody can do to make them better. They have to want to make themselves better. So suggesting, you know, let's throw them in this program. Let's make them get better. Let's clean them up and get them back on the streets. I've seen that. But I've seen many people relapse from going through that same situation. You know, it's very hard when they've been on drugs. So let's say 10, 20, maybe 30 years to say, I'm clean now. You know, I can walk into any room and I can be this truthful person that I know that I am. That is not true. These people, they are hustlers, shucklers, they're jivers. They're more like the New York City, you know, guy that's out there gambling on the street and telling you pick the peanut up under the top. And he's like, he's hustling and shuckling you all throughout the game. So, you know, these people have a way of conforming their stories to make them sound real. They can even pretend, because when Tina was arrested, she began to cry and couldn't believe someone stole her baby. You know, she thought she was doing the right thing by giving him away for $500 because she wanted to go get high. And guess what? After this kid was gone, it took the family members to say, hold it. We're not going to participate with your fraud. We're going to call you out on your fraud because what you're doing is wrong. So who did Tina have to get back at by doing such an act? Or was it that she just wanted to use drugs to get high, to perpetrate a fraud on this three different stories of what happened to her kid? You know, I'm surprised that they didn't give her a polygraph. But you see, when you have a person that struggles with mental illness, they can be whoever you need them to be, because that brain starts to tick on different ends. And it depends on the end that's ticking. You don't know if it's the truth, and you definitely don't know if it's a lie. They have a way of tricking those machines by the multiple personality disorder. And I'm not a medical doctor to share this. This is just things that I've been given knowledge on how a person with mental illness can sit back and they can let their minds play a trick on them to make them believe certain things that really didn't happen. So meanwhile, Tina's making up a story on Virginia Graham, who, in fact, if Virginia Graham was a real person, she would be more like Tiana Parks right now, saying, guess what? I did give her $500, but I got the kid. Here's the kid. I was just trying to help out, like Tiana Parks. She wanted to help out. She wanted to give King a stable environment. Matter of fact, she was like a mommy to him. Do his hair, keep him clean, you know, feed him, bathe him. Yeah, that type of stuff. So the same thing that someone else came along and did, but kind of strange. But there's more to share on this story. Hang tight. Let's take a commercial break and I'll be right back.
Are you looking forward to sell your house in Philadelphia at a fair price, but are just not patient enough to go through the long, delirious process of enlisting your house in the market? Well, look no further, because GBuys Philly has got your back. You can sell house in Philadelphia without going through the trouble of navigating complex sales procedures. We specialize in helping property owners just like yourself in all sorts of burdensome situations. We pay a fair cash price and save you all the stress and inconveniences of damages or repairs. We will buy your home. Fast, easy, and convenient. No commission to realtors. No home inspections. Cash deal equals no mortgages. Property as is. No repairs. 100% fair offer guarantee. Sell your house fast for cash in Philadelphia. So what are you waiting for? Just contact us now at www.gbuysphilly.com. experience, honesty, and integrity guaranteed. Remember, she buys Philly.
Hey guys, remember, G buys Philly. He seems to be the man running around selling properties for like that $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 price. She buys Philly. We love you, G. Back to Tina, the woman, the mother, Vanderhorst, that actually had this disappearance with the son going on. Would you believe, okay, Tina gets out of jail, and in October 2016, some of you guys that, you know, are natives to Philadelphia may be aware of this particular story. She actually stabs a man 77 times in his apartment and set him on fire. Mind you, this was all throughout a drunken, raging high. She suffers from mental illness. She stabbed a man 77 times in his own apartment and set him on fire. She was charged, by the way. She was charged with murder, robbery, arson, and a whole bunch of other charges. But then, guess what? Someone said, this lady has a serious mental illness condition, and we can't charge her with all of these charges, you know, because we've known that she's had mental illness from the 80s. Mind you, all her kids ended up dead besides two of them and one missing. So, you know, this has actually clicked in someone's brain. So now the Philadelphia Police Department is reaching out for anyone who may have any information about the whereabouts of Keyshawn Vanderhorst since 1995. Mind you, some people in 95 might be dead by now. You know, I mean, no offense, but as the case grows and it gets older, things change. People don't remember things as much. You know, they'll remember some things, but they won't remember a lot. So it's better when you got fresh clues on, you know, a story of a missing kid to keep it fresh. Because there's some podcasts out here that will, they'll run it for a little while. It'll get old and they'll say, oh, you know what? The kid was never found. And guess what? We got to move on to something else. You know, and basically this has happened a lot with a lot of cases, you know, and they should actually keep these cases alive. But in the particular King Hill case, it was asked by, you know, the family members to like kill it. Don't speak of this case anymore, which, you know, someone reached out to me on Instagram and said, this was a little weird to them. Why would the family want to silence, you know, the podcast, which it was the first podcast to take the story was SP News Nuggets. Very good podcast, by the way. And they wanted to silence her and they wanted to shut her down. You know, she received death threats. She received all kinds of stuff going on. We know where you live. We know where to find you type of thing. Mind you, she's in a whole nother state, minding her business, doing the good things that she does with putting the news out there of these missing children, not only just King Hill, but a host of other children. But when you're being threatened by family members, you know, stop talking about the kid. I'm just going to say from my own experience, if I had a missing kid, I would want that story to be heard. And I would beg and plead with any podcaster, any news station. I would want to give updates. I would want to be in the limelight every step of the way because my baby has been taken. You know, there was a family member who they called Redhead that was Tiana Park's aunt. You know, the cries from her mouth of, let's find this kid, let's bring him back home. You know, it was something very strange, though, because this young lady had mentioned that King Hill was on the DHS most wanted list. He was a wanted child for confiscation. You know, he was going to be confiscated. you know, he was going to be taken. So they felt as though this is the reason why he was now missing. They did not want him to go into the system because they knew he would be taken. And then, I'm not sure if you guys remember this, but there was the baby daddy that started posting, one of the baby daddies that started posting, you know, he never really got a chance to know the kid. He only met him once. He had a disturbing relationship with mother, which is not unusual today because, listen, guys, not all people are going to get along, especially if there's a child involved and you're not doing what you're supposed to do. So let's not prejudge and think that it was all the mother's fault. It could have been the father's fault too. Maybe she wanted him to step up and he didn't step up. So that could have played a major role as well. And don't forget, we had the babysitter dad along with, you know, cousin with the space lunch that was, you know, chauffeuring the kid around from location to location. No shoes, shirt looking like it was ripped off for him. You know, according to what was said on the show, you know, nothing that I'm saying. And we could get cousin back on to verify some things, but I can only go by what's said to me to try to make sense out of it. You know, so a lot of things that a lot of people are saying now, you know, they're asking me for answers. And I'm like, I don't have any answers. And if I did have certain answers, I'm not privy to share those things with you because I am Team Tiana Parks and I will forever be Team Tiana Parks. Because I do believe the day that I spoke to her, I do believe Tiana Parks when she said to me that she dropped him off with sincerity. I didn't believe not for one second that this young lady was lying. You know, like the police chief got on the news and said, somebody's lying here. He just couldn't figure out who it was. But for sure, I wholeheartedly believed Tiana Parks, and I'm going to be Team Tiana Parks until the day that she's free and that young lady can move on with her life. Because some people do things, you know, to be vindictive to others, and I get it. But this kind of vindictiveness to steal someone's life from them because and due to mental illness is very wrong. It's a very heinous crime to commit against another. As a matter of fact, there was a guy today, I think he's the Black Lives Matters president, and there was a Hispanic lady. They were on the radio today speaking about how does Hispanic lives matter to the Black Life Matters group? And he basically said, listen, we have a Puerto Rican guy, and mind you, this lady was Dominican. So she was more like, okay, because he's like, we have a Puerto Rican guy that's a part of our group. And he's like one of the, you know, uppity up fellas that would be like a decision maker. And basically, he said, you know, he's Puerto Rican. And this Dominican lady is saying, well, you do realize that Puerto Ricans are actually Americans. Like Puerto Rico is a part of America. So you're saying that Black Lives Matter to Dominican Republic immigrants, she was trying to figure out how does that matter. But I'm touching on that subject to say that in this particular King Hill case, it would have been nice to see some Black Lives Matters people come out and support in the event of looking for this 2/3-year-old child at the time. But it was said to me from a female out of that group, because at that time I was like, the kid is missing. Somebody needs to get out there and do something. It was said to me from a female out of that BLM group that they had a hard time believing the story and they wanted nothing to do with it. And I parked it right there and I said, you know what? I appreciate your help. Because it was other people that was involved. There was a gentleman that was out on a search party. He was part of a male group or some type of group from the Strawberry Hill Mansion area. But he had a lot of things to say as well. And I don't want to put anything in anybody's mouth, but maybe we'll have him on the show one day. so he can share some things so that way you can hear it from the horse's mouth. But they didn't want to touch this story because King Hill is Puerto Rican and Black, according to what the grandmother shared on the media. She shared that he was of Latino descent. His dad is Puerto Rican and his mom is African American. The grandmother shared that. It's public information. And I was kind of behooved that with such a big organization that gets millions and millions of dollars would have the audacity to say to me that they wanted nothing to do with this case because something didn't add up to them. I found that very weird. And from my knowledge today and speaking to this young lady recently, I just wanted to know, would their view have changed now that the FBI declared King deceased? No body, no trace, no murder weapon. Would they still feel the same way today? And would they still get involved today with all the millions of dollars that's poured into this BLM that has the Puerto Rican CEO and the Black member founders? Would they participate today knowing what they know now moving forward in the investigation? And this young lady said to me, she said, what she said then still stands now. There is no way they would have participated because something didn't smell right and still doesn't smell right about this case. So I bared a grin and smile and I accepted that. But it was kind of confusing to me because all this money that's being poured in should actually be poured into finding these children, especially with such a big organization. They have millions and millions of people in this BLM that, you know, participate in things such as these. And you know, just the GoFundMe alone, $7,000-$8,000 for a GoFundMe, that still wasn't enough money. Let's say if the body was found and she had to bury the kid and prepare food and, you know, so on to, you know, a proper burial for the kid would run you between $10,000 to $15,000. You know, and there's been someone has said some things in regards to that fundraiser that is a family member, by the way, and she wanted to come on, but I don't like to be messy and I didn't want to throw anybody under the bus. But I was just surprised that the BLM didn't contribute to this particular cause. And just looking at how they wanted to just stay away and separate themselves was a little strange to me because this case got like real big across the world. People in the UK knew about this case. And to see certain big entities fall back, it was like, okay, we're not just the Strawberry Mansion, you know, advocacy group that goes out. It was just kind of weird how they did that. So I was, you know, I respect them at the end of the day. I respect them and I get it. They don't want to step on anybody's toes when it comes to certain things because it seems like it's a higher power than just them that's in control. And it could be more political because had they stepped into this game of hide and go seek, maybe they knew something more than what the rest of the world knew of why they didn't want to participate in anything dealing with this particular case. Because a lot of it is political and a lot of it is funding. So at the end of the day, it kind of wakes you up to reality and say, you know what? I have to respect them, even though they didn't want to play a part in it. And it actually supports, you know, what everybody stands for. Black Lives Matter. You know, and just because your skin tone is lighter than everybody else, it shouldn't be, you know, because you're a different color, we're going to stay away. No, this is what they stand for. I mean, they painted it all over the streets. They spray painted it everywhere. I don't know if you can remember during the riot or the looting, as they call it, you had Asian people writing BLM and a African-American girl saying, hey, wait a minute. Don't write that on the wall. Don't you vandalize this property. They're going to think we did it. And the Asian woman looked at her and said, I'm trying to help you out, miss, by writing BLM. You know, and she's like, we don't need any help. We're good. we got our own support team. So, you know, a lot of things go on behind the scenes that we don't know about. But for the sake of Tiana Parks, I'm praying for her. I know a lot of other people that are praying for her. And hopefully the truth will come out. And the babysitter dad and the cousin with the space lunch, I'd like to thank them also for all of their dedication, especially cousin that came on the show. I really would like to say thank you, cousin, for everything that you've done, from down to SP News Nugget, going on the show, telling the truth, disclosing what he knew about Tiana Parks from the beginning, his participation in getting her there so she could clear her name for herself. I just got a couple of messages, guys, about my bracelet. Someone thought it was a coin, but no, it's my bracelet. They asked me to stop shaking my bracelet. It's annoying. So I'm going to hold my bracelet so it's quiet. But, you know, I like to thank cousin for coming on the show. And I'd like to thank the lady that had that agency that knew Beetle for those many years, that shared some details with us. I like to thank her as well for, you know, sharing some things and making awareness come to light about a lot of things. I like to thank the Funt attorney agency that represents Parks right now. I like to thank them for their investigative work in handling the case and helping to prove this young lady's innocence. I would like to thank her family members that shared information into the exact location of where King Hill was actually dropped off at. I would like to thank them for that, because without that information, I don't think that we would be hearing this end of T. Parks is still waiting to go to trial. We would hear that a year has gone by and we're waiting for her sentencing day. But she will have her day to vindicate herself and speak her truth, regardless of whatever her participation was, if any. Maybe it was to, like her family member said, to get more money for caring for the kid, because the babysitter dad had X amount of dollars set up for her. So, you know, sometimes greed, you got to stay away from greed, people, because sometimes when you open Pandora's box, you can't close it. And it may cause you havoc if you leave that box open and you sit there and you wait for some things to happen that you believe you're doing good. And then in turn, it could be very bad for you, you know. And unfortunately for Parks, I believe she opened up Pandora's box, you know, and unfortunately she had to go through this experience, which I hope in the future it doesn't deter her from people or children, because this could have a damaging effect on her at some time or part in her life. And like Tina, who suffers from mental illness, who's a severe drug addict, who'll never be clean forever, never in her life. Because we're going back 30 years with this woman of just getting high and not remembering anything about any kids. And you got the DHS system that said, boom, we recognize you after five of your kids are dead now. We recognize who you are. But hopefully people can get the real help that they need, and hopefully they can come clean with, you know, we want to stay off of the drugs and get off of the rat poisoning, because that's what that stuff is out there today. So I like to say thank you for joining me. We'll have a great show next week. I look forward to you all being on again. Same bat place, same bat time. Tommy Torres signing off.
You're listening to It's Confirmed with Tomiko Torres, only on LA Talk Radio.